Welcome back. I'm Juliette Tlevi. You're watching Stockwatch, and joining me in studio this evening are Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Santon and Dricus Combrink from Capricraft. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. A couple of days ahead of the elections, SMS Stock in the Question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Jonathan, Dricus, nice to see you both this evening. And it wasn't a great start to the week, and it is going to be a slightly odd week for us, and we can talk about the effect that the election are going to pose in the markets. But we had the US and China sparked
6% down on the Shanghai Stock Exchange. The technology index was more than 8% down. So it's quite a shock and awe. But I think it's tactical from him. I think they knew that they were going to do this just before the talks. And it's a massive risk, though.
Jonathan, the reaction of the market, which was, and the tweet was about increasing tariffs to 25% from 10%, and then extending that onto a range of a whole lot more, I think about $325 billion worth of goods. The reaction of the market does suggest that they take the tweet seriously. So do you think it's going to undo all the gains that we have sort of have slowly accumulated over the past couple of months, given that there seemed to be a bit more conviction that there was going to be an amenable trade deal hammered out? Do you think that's all been undone?
I wouldn't say just yet. It's still early days. So as you've said, we've had a very good quarter, in fact, going into the second quarter in world markets. And I think part of the reason has been the market's expectation of a positive trade deal for the world economy. And, you know, just forget about China and America, because what happens there does affect our country and other countries around the world. So now, this, like you call it, what was a tantrum tweet?
Tantrum tweet.
By Trump.
Well, we had the taper tantrum a couple of years ago. So the trade tweet tantrum.
It's unfortunate because, you know, we want a trade deal that's going to be good for those two economies and world economies. And for this to happen, you know, like Tricker says, I mean, it's just wiped off a whole lot of value off world markets and Chinese markets. But I think it all depends. Are the Chinese actually going to go and participate in this trade talk negotiation or not? So Donald Trump saying that, no, these trade talks are just taking too long. Everything's just going at a slow pace. Remember where he comes from. He's a deal maker. He wants to do a deal now, no, yesterday. And this is happening for, you know, way too long for his liking. Having said that, I think it's early days. We still hope that the two sides will come to some kind of agreement to the benefit of everybody.
Yeah, a lot of people regard her as full of bluster, essentially. What about our own, the factors that are going to be affecting our own market this week? And that is, of course, Wednesday's elections. Mm. Do you get the sense that a lot of people are just holding back for now, that no big bets are going to be made prior to Wednesday, or I suppose when the results start trickling in, I guess, on Thursday or Friday, that
I think
everyone is just holding off?
I think that's been the case for the last 6 months or so. So, you know, it's investors, consumers, businesses, they've all been, you know, keeping their foot off the tap. All the confidence
levels. Well, having said that, Dricus, I mean, the market has rallied convincingly.
Well, it's on the back of the world markets that's recovered. So it's not necessarily anything to do with our markets. Slightly, ever so slightly, there has been some uptick in some of the SA Inc. stocks, but nothing really to write home about. Nothing like we saw with Ramaphoria in the beginning of last year. So all of the confidence levels, we're coming off a low base here confidence-wise. Investor confidence, business confidence, and consumer confidence is lower than it was pre-94 election. So we're sitting at a low base, and if there's no big surprises, negative surprises coming off the election, and within the first 100 days, that there is some signs of a more stiff-necked Ramaphosa getting together a more business-friendly cabinet, etc., etc., then from these low confidence levels, you might see a cyclical upswing. But a cyclical upswing, we've still got major structural problems in the country, and you won't see a return to 3% plus structural growth anytime soon unless there's deep structural reforms in government, and I don't see that coming.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan, the interview that we played before we went on air was Redefined CFO Leon Kok speaking about how all things being equal, they actually only expect any sort of upturn in the 2021 financial year. So it's not going to happen in 2019, even if there are policy improvements and there's more certainty, et cetera. It's going to take a while to filter through. Just actually on Redefine's results, what did you make of the fact that the market marked it up 2.5% today?
Well, I thought that they didn't disappoint. They came in with expectation, which is HEPS or headline earnings up 4%, so they came in with that number. And steady as you go. I mean, you know, in this type of environment, you're not going to get, sorry, it's not HEPS, it's distribution growth of 4%. Yep. You're not going to get distribution growth of 6, 7, 8% unless you're doing something completely different. It's a very big company, so they can't really do that much different. Yeah, I guess the market probably liking the outlook. They've said that they're going to do similar numbers for the second half, in fact, for the full year. And as you say, it all depends on what happens in this economy over the next 6 to 12 months, which will affect how they perform in the following year and second year going forward.
Yeah, because I mean, I thought maybe the market is being a bit generous. So yes, 4% distribution growth was expected. But they've had rental reversions of 6%. In other words, on average, rentals have actually fallen by 6%. In some of their portfolios, it was horrific. It was about 17%, I think, in their industrial portfolio. So, I mean, that I would have thought would have chased potential investors far away.
So I think that's part of the macro headwinds that they're facing, and that feeds into the macro headwinds. At the other side of the business, they're managing it quite well. How exactly they're doing it, I'm not sure, but I think the market will be standing back and saying, listen, 4% distribution growth, if they can maintain that, and they've alluded to that, that 4% is sustainable enough for them. On top of the yield that it's pricing at the moment, what's the yield sitting at? About 8%, 9%? Is it more than that?
Close to 10%.
That gives you about a 12%, 13% total return, and that is actually what you're looking for over the longer term in a quality property counter, maybe next to Growthpoint, the most, you know, up there quality-wise on the SA Burs. So I think it's fairly cheaply priced here for the quality, and it's still dependent on the economy to a large extent.
Yeah. Before we get to questions, there was another company story today, and that was Massmart. And it's, I suppose, Massmart really battled since the Walmart deal to make much headway. It hasn't been a particularly exciting share. You don't really get the sense of Walmart's hand behind the scenes, or maybe it's more of a dead hand than anything else. Mm. And then the news today that Guy Hayward, the CEO, is going to be stepping down. There's no certainty on when that's going to happen and who's going to replace him. The share came off more than 3% today, and that to me was quite interesting, because if a company is under pressure, the CEO announces his or her intent to resign, you often see a bit of a relief rally, but the markets took it kind of badly. Do you think it's because maybe there is no replacement and no sense of when he's going to leave?
What is the company's strategy? I don't know. I can't read anything into this. Neither can the market, apparently. So what is the strategy in the difficult environment that we have? They're already a low-cost discounter, you know, warehousing and et cetera. So, and they're not performing in a difficult environment. One normally would expect that consumers would trade down, but it's not happening. To a large extent, their markets or their consumers or their customers are resellers into your lower ISM groupings, say the townships or rural areas, etc. And to a certain extent, those groupings, those LSM groupings, have been supported by government spending over the last few years, and that's hit a brick wall the last year or two. Mm. So you're not feeling that tailwind anymore, and they've got no answers at the moment.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jonathan, you sort of wonder, I mean, Massmart, are they having a bit of an identity crisis and don't really know? We were talking about it in the newsroom today. Who would we compare them to? And there's no necessarily a direct comparison for Massmart. I suppose the closest maybe to some extent is Spar, because they've got Build It. Massmart's got a bit of a food element, but who are they? What are they? I mean, does that speak to Dricus's point about how they should be making headwind and it tricky economy with a low-cost offering, but they're not.
Look, they are unique. They sell white and brown goods, semi-durables. And in this type of environment, you know, to sell fridges for 5,000 or 10,000 rand is going to be difficult. So, you know, you compare them maybe to some of the furniture retailers, and on the same side you've got non-durables where you can throw in a spa or a ShopRite. So it's kind of a mix between the two.
Yeah.
But they're having such a tough time. I mean, you know, you go into the game in Rosebank, just up the road here on the weekend, it's empty. Every time you walk in there, it's empty. So, you know, how sustainable is this business in this kind of environment? It's very difficult. So to see someone like our Hayward stepping down for no particular reason, he's been with the business 20 years, CEO for 5 years, there's something going on there. But like Drika says, we don't know what changes are going to happen and how they're going to change that strategy.
Yeah, so would both of you stay well away at this point?
I would.
Okay, getting to questions on shares that have been hammered over of the last while. Any thoughts on Omnia? There are rumours that they have breached debt covenants and will need a rights issue.
Well, they've already gotten 90% of the creditors together, and they've already signed an extension or waiver or whatever you might call it. A rights issue is still possible. So the problems that they had, some of them are once-off, a lot of them aren't. So they need a recovery in the end markets, and they need to not repeat some of the mistakes that they've made. So that's quite plausible, but still, they might be short of some cash in 6 months or 12 months' time. I'm not sure until when the waiver with the credit is assigned. But then still, they would need to extend the waiver, or they would need a rights issue. So the jury is out on that one. The risk is there for a rights issue, but it's sitting on, I think, a forward price earnings ratio of about 5-6. That's extremely cheap, and certainly worth a punt. I'm not too sure about the long-term sustainable advantage that they have in their markets.
Omnia always was quite a cyclical company, wasn't it?
Well,
and it's
visible.
Gone through these sort of periods of...
It's got cyclical end markets, firstly, and secondly, they've got no competitive advantage, really. So, and they've been, you know, acquiring and growing organically as well, or at least reinvesting in the business, new plant and property for the last few years, and into a difficult environment. So with that accumulated a lot of debt. I'm not sure if that was the right strategy. Maybe it will pay off in the end. But I don't see any competitive advantage there, so I'm still staying away.
Mm. Jonathan, how about you?
I'd watch that space closely. I wouldn't be buying. Agreed that part of the problem is self-inflicted. I think they bought a business in East Africa and Kenya, and that's increased their finance expense, plus their debt, obviously. And then, of course, the drought of, 2 years ago, and in the Cape, that's negatively affected them, and that's out of their control.
Mm. And that might come back to their advantage. That might be a tailwind again in the coming seasons. But still, they've got a lot of debt now. So whether they'll produce enough cash flow in coming periods to dig themselves out, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, so definitely a potential rights offer on the cards, but because they're cheap.
Worth a punt, but I'm not sure if I'm willing to getting in as a long-term investor.
Yeah, okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. SMS us, email us, or tweet us, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets. As we said at the start of the show, Trump's tweet tantrum has really rattled markets. And you can see there the S&P 500 off 0.8%, the Nasdaq now off almost 1%, and the Dow Jones trading 0.75% weaker. Across the Atlantic, the FTSE 100 was closed today, or the UK markets were closed for a bank holiday. So that market didn't trade. No doubt it'll have a rude awakening tomorrow. The CAC 40 down 1.2%, and the DAX coming off 1%. We closed 1.3% weaker. And still with me in studio are Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Santon and Drikus Kombrink from Capicraft. There's a question on, so we were talking about Massmart's share exposed to the retail sector, and there's a question on CMH, Combined Motor Holdings, asking whether it's a target or a potential delisting. Interesting.
I think insider ownership's quite high at CMH, and the company has also been buying back shares, so I'm not sure if it's going to be a successful takeover target, where they're going to get shares. Liquidity is very thin. If it was a hostile takeover, they'd have to move that price share, they had to double it just to get in, to get 5% of the share of the free float. So I'm not sure that's it's possible, but I'm not sure it's that. But what has happened after the earnings results, I think the market was expecting quite dismal results, and it wasn't great results, but given the environment that they were in, and with a stock that's been sitting around a 6-7 price earnings ratio, I think a bit of a re-rating that we've seen post the results about a week, 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
And I think it's had about a 15-20% or 15% rally rather. And they've actually held the dividend constant in what has been a difficult market. Excellent operators. I mean these guys are great stewards. And I think what helps is that they're small enough to be nimble enough in the industry, doing the right things, moving financing from the fleet division, paying that off at the moment. They're doing all the right things from a management perspective.
Yeah, and they have done so over the last 15 years.
Yeah,
I mean, this has been, you know, it's often ignored by the markets, but the dividends. Track record is incredible.
It's just under the radar, you know, the big guys can't get in.
No, it's too small for, you know, like you said, the big institutions.
But, I mean, if it were to be a takeover target, who would buy it? Would it be now, for example, now that you've had Imperial spin off Motus from the logistics business,
Super
could
group.
A Motus or a Super Group look Super at something group, yeah. like Combined Motor Holdings?
Sure.
Sure, should we give the financiers a ring?
I mean, that's what they do. They sell motor vehicles, new used vehicles, and they're good at it. You know, they've had a very good track record, like you say. And who knows, maybe they have been looked at, just, not gone in there and spoken in management, but say, hey, these are the numbers, this might be an opportunity.
And it's still a very fragmented market. There's a lot of one-man shows out there, single operators. That's worth buying out, that you'll pay much less for
than something
like a listed company where a proxy battle can go on for months and elevate the price. And so I'm not sure if that's it's possible. Once again, I've seen stranger things. But even with or without that, I think it's a great company. And as we just talked off air, now if there's a recovery in confidence, consumer confidence, from these low base levels, you know, passenger car sales, etc., will pick up a bit, and that will do a lot for the bottom line of CMH. Now, the average car lifetime in SA is 9.5 years at the moment.
I mean, that's probably one of the longest it's been for a long time,
yes.
Huh?
On record.
Yeah. Okay, so with a gander, what about the platinum shares? Jonathan, the question is, the platinum shares seem to be holding up very well, despite a fall off in the price of both platinum and palladium. Any reason for this resilience?
Look, I mean, platinum shares tend to be correlated to the platinum price to a large degree, as well as to the rand. So the rand's been weak over the past 2 or 3 weeks, and that's probably been helping. The pullback in the platinum price has been offset by the weaker rand to some extent. And I think one needs to look at, or what is the rand price of platinum done over the last 2 or 3 weeks?
So it's probably pretty stable, actually.
Pretty stable, I would suspect.
The rand price of the PGM basket has actually, I think, done pretty well over the last 3 years or so.
Right. So that might be a reason. It might just be a bit overdone. And who knows? We'll have to see when the results come out, probably in 4 or 5 months' time of these companies.
If you had bought into the platinum stocks at the right time, you'd be... I mean, this has been a fantastic year. Mm-hmm. Do you think the gains have been had though? I'm not sure if I would call it the easy money because
easy
people
money,
suffered for their platinum stock picks for a very long time.
I don't know many people who bought at the recent lows, but I do many that's been holding since. It's all about perspective and changing the base period to make a point. If you change the base period 10 years back, you know,
you're still actually,
everybody's
you're still
losing
underwater.
Money. I think bar one, it's Northam. And we own ZMBC Platinum. You know, I think you're getting a 13% return there with fairly low risk.
So Northam is your preferred pick of the sector?
Yeah, but we do it through ZMBC. Only through ZMBC where you've got not a guarantee, but, you know, you've got a pref share there that's yielding about 13%.
Okay. But you wouldn't be adding to your position at this point, would you?
If it yields 15%, we'll add.
Jonathan, how about you? I mean, do any of whether they be platinum, gold, or the diversified resources stocks, do they tempt you at all?
So I mean, we holding Anglos and BHP Billiton. We preferred the diversified miners over the specific metal or ore miners, purely from a risk perspective, and you kind of, you know, spreading your eggs, if one can call it that. So you've got different commodities and you benefit. If one commodity should fall, you've got others that can lift you up.
Yeah, because there's a question asking whether you see any upside or further upside for Kumba at this point in time.
Well, it depends. That iron ore price, I looked at it earlier, it's still very high. It's $96 a ton.
I don't think the diversified miners or pure players like Kumba is pricing in the level of the iron ore price at this stage. They would be, I suggest, 30%, 40% high if they were. But the market is pricing some, you know, reversal of that iron ore price, because a lot of what it was the Vale dam burst that took 5% off world seaborne iron ore supply. So that will come back onto the market, I'm not sure when, and the iron ore price should feel that again to the downside. So the market is, it's not going to price in the full extent of the iron ore price that we've seen since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, well, that would be, you know, I guess somewhat foolish to do. Would you take profits on Kumba, though, at this point?
Yeah, I'm a China skeptic, so I'm generally not bullish on commodities or base metals and iron ore specifically, because of, you know, I think China's structural growth is changing at the moment. They had problems before. Growth was coming down tremendously before, you know, any talk of trade wars. And in year two's time, you will see China again normalizing growth, and this time it will be 5-point-something percent, then 4-point-something percent, and the composition of that growth will be more services led. They're not building that much more buildings and highways from these high base, you know, percentage wise they're already sitting on a high base. Some, you know, they're still buying 50-60% of the world's iron ore.
They can't, yes, exactly. Not sure how much more they can buy.
Yeah.
There was a question that came through last week, towards the end of last week, asking about ETFs. Can you ask your panel if it's safer now to invest into ETFs than into pure equity traded stocks? And so it's a slightly odd question, because ETFs, of course, give you exposure to the market. But maybe the question is more, do you buy a basket of shares or do you pick a few shares at this point in time? Which would you be doing?
So I think that's exactly what the viewer is trying to ask
allude
here.
Allude to,
basically, take 3 or 4 shares, or is it safer to buy an ETF? So it is safer to buy an ETF, purely from diversification. And then you've got to take a view. Well, is this market at a level where you'll be happy to buy it and hold it for the next year, 2 or 3 years? And if your feeling is yes, well, then there's no problem in buying an ETF, your general ETF.
I mean, you know, towards the end of last year, there was a lot of fear that that the next cataclysm in the market could be as a result of the proliferation of exchange-traded funds, that it would cause, if you saw a considerable market downturn, it would prompt a sort of roiling selling of ETFs, which would then exacerbate a sell-off further. Trickett, do you agree?
Maybe we saw some of that in late 2018, December. Was partly driven by maybe a policy mistake from the Fed. Secondly, I think that escalated into a week, generally a week trading period just before Christmas. And what you saw is a very, you know, over that period and into January, you had almost no net inflows of ETFs and index funds in the US, where in the last 10 years, you've seen each and every month huge inflows, you know, almost setting a record every new month. So all of a sudden, you had just it hit a brick wall. So that's maybe
that we've had that already.
Yeah, well, it gives you some taste onto what will come eventually. But it might take many years before it's there. But that's built into the general, more systematic risk of the market.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk stock picks now. Jonathan, yours is Discovery. Why do you like it?
Okay, so Discovery, it is trading at 1.39 times embedded value, which is a lot higher than its peers. Okay, but the question is, so why? So reason is, historically, they've grown at a much faster rate than their peers. And the profitability of new businesses gathered and grown has been very good. They have come off over the past couple of months, and that was after their last set of numbers were released end of February, which were disappointing. I think we discussed this last time we were here. It wasn't a stock pick, but it came up for discussion. And the reasons were very good, that basically that their earnings were knocked because of their new investments, the bank, plus other investments, Ping An, Pru Health in the UK, and others. So we think that 2-3 years from now, at these kind of levels, there will be value forthcoming.
Yeah. Okay. Andricus, sorry to curtail you there. You're buying Caterpillar.
Now, Caterpillar is sitting about 11 price earnings ratio, which, you know, for a company that's got cyclical end markets and the earnings base is really high at the moment. 2017 saw them coming with 2018 earnings coming in fairly high. And, you know, sensitive end markets, mining, housing in the US, but they're quite diversified. And what you've seen the last 10 years is that the end markets aren't completely synchronized. You know, they aren't always firing, all cylinders aren't firing at one time, and not all of them are in a downswing either at one time, which I like. And secondly, in spite of them being in a cyclical market, they're the absolute leaders in their field. They've got this tremendous competitive advantage. I think according to Morningstar's research, it will need about $20 billion investment in distribution and into the dealer network that they have just to replicate what they already have. You know, that's an enormous other moat. Mm. In addition to the brand names already have. So I think that's something to look at.
Yeah, okay. We have to leave it there, unfortunately. Drikus, Jonathan, thanks for joining us this evening. Jonathan Fisher is from PSG Wealth, and Drikus Combring from Capicraft, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night. Have a good evening. Let's talk stock picks now. Jonathan, yours is Discovery. Why do you like it?
Okay, so Discovery, it is trading at 1.39 times embedded value, which is a lot higher than its peers. Okay, but the question is, so why? So reason is, historically, they've grown at a much faster rate than their peers. And the profitability of new businesses gathered and grown has been very good. They have come off over the past couple of months, and that was after their last set of numbers were released end of February, which were disappointing. I think we discussed this last time we were here. It wasn't a stock pick, but it came up for discussion. And the reasons were very good, that basically that their earnings were knocked because of their new investments, the bank, plus other investments, Ping An, Pru Health in the UK, and others. So we think that 2-3 years from now, at these kind of levels, there will be value forthcoming.
Yeah, okay. Andricus, sorry to curtail you there, you're buying Caterpillar.
Now, Caterpillar is sitting about 11 price earnings ratio, which, you know, for a company that's got cyclical end markets and the earnings base is really high at the moment, 2017 saw them coming with 2018 earnings coming in fairly high. And, you know, sensitive end markets, mining, housing in the US, but they're quite diversified. And what you've seen the last 10 years is that the end markets aren't completely synchronized. You know, they aren't always firing, all cylinders aren't firing at one time, and not all of them are in a downswing either at one time, which I like. And secondly, in spite of them being in a cyclical market, they're the absolute leaders in their field. They've got this tremendous competitive advantage. I think according to Morningstar's research, it will need about $20 billion investment in distribution and into the dealer network that they have just to replicate what they already have. You know, that's an enormous other moat. Mm. In addition to the brand names they already have. So I think that's something to look at.
Yeah, okay. We have to leave it there, unfortunately. Drikus, Jonathan, thanks for joining us this evening. Jonathan Fisher is from PSG Wealth, and Drikus Combring from Capicraft, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night. Have a good evening. Thank you.